All right, well, let's bring this meeting back to order. It's about 10:47.
Okay, so the next part of the material, I'm going to ask Justin to go over, and those are just two of the pieces dealing with addressing the way that we are proposing to work for doing an impact analysis, as well as board asked us to think about including measurable outcomes as part of their planning process and the general design frame data. So that will turn it over to you, Justin.
Thank you. So I'm Justin Buttress, policy analyst with State Forest Division of Forestry again. So I'll draw your attention to the document at the top. It says the definitions for key planning terms, attachment 3, from the board packet. So this really just has a brief summary, kind of a definition around what each of these planning terms that we are discussing as we go through the development of the forest management plan, what each of those is and what it means. So we spent a lot of time on guiding principles, and once we get approval of those, we can then move on to articulating the goals, strategies, et cetera, that will help us achieve those objectives of the board with those guiding principles in mind. So goals, strategies, standards we've spent some time talking about, and there's really nothing new there from what we did in January even. But at that time, we were asked to add to our, what we were characterizing as the content table for the forest management plan, something to help articulate what the outcomes of the plan would be and understand what those might be as we're making some changes, or proposed changes and sort of evaluations. So we developed this, and then also the impacts analysis framework to be able to look at what happens when you change your strategies on the outputs and in the context of the greatest predictive value of those impacts might be. So measurable outcomes are the quantifiable results of our strategies. And they may also be referred to as performance measures. So we currently have that language in use, so slightly different, but really the intent there is the same. So the measurable outcome is just the thing that you can measure, whereas the quantifiable target is adding a little bit more substance to what the measurable outcome is, and really indicates whether you're meeting or exceeding or not quite there the objectives of the goal. So those are established to measure progress toward the desired outcome and are intended to be flexible in the adaptive management context and framework. So when you get new information, better field of science might change what is the quantifiable target for that measurable outcome. So adaptive management can be applied to both management practices and the outcomes that they're intended to achieve through that mechanism. So nothing has changed with respect to these materials. This attachment is exactly the same as what we presented in April. The board really was not able to spend any substantive time discussing this or the impacts analysis framework just because of the challenges that Liz has already described. So the board asked us in April to bring back the whole package and discuss that further. So that's what we'll be doing later this month. So any questions, comments on that?
Yes. On the next page is an example of the guiding principle. In this case, it's the GPC rule.
Sure.
That's a credit statement in the form of a question that I gave. So far, I'm right. Okay, so if I'm right, then the guiding principles are those delineated? Do we just go through those?
Yes. And so the protecting the enhanced wildlife habitats is one of the guiding principles.
Yep.
So it's, you know.
Part of principle 2.
Yep. Okay.
That's just a really, really brief summary of what is kind of in this proposed. And this table is really just intended to be an example terms of an actual proposal to the board or anyone else that here's how all this should play out. This is just an example to demonstrate how all these things fit together. So, good point.
So as we've gone through time, we looked at this one particular example multiple times now. Have you created more of these in the same format so we actually could begin to see more of this reporting of where we are maybe with some of this? Maybe, is that, are we at a point, I understand we're working still on a plan, but do we have more of the, if this format is right, do we have more done in this format?
Well, so the, it's a real, so yes, when the board approves the guiding principles, then we can move forward. But since we, they are guiding principles and they're approved, and again, we do have an existing management plan that has these already in it. And so, but that, I think is, you mentioned the next step would be beginning to develop goals and strategies. And I think that's the board, not everything necessarily, you know, how far are you going with the table may vary by what your goal and objective is. And, you know,
and what measurable outcomes you might have been able to collect better.
Yeah.
And so I'm not expecting all completion, but I was just curious to be done more in this format.
I would just add that at the January meeting, the board expressed an interest in empowering the staff and the division to come back with strong recommendations. And an example of that was, hey, why don't you go forward and populate the table as much as you can?
Exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So.
And so, so the guiding principles was as far as we could get the, at the April meeting. And so the intention would be, and the board, I would say, has empowered us to populate this as much as we can with as many strategies as we think need to be established to implement them. So I'll say that. The second piece I would want to highlight is part of what the board approved in January was a work plan for getting from here to four to a final forest management plan. And while we weren't able to come to a conclusion in April around this, these sets of products, we were actually ahead of schedule, in essence, at the April meeting. And so with a decision here in July, we're still on schedule with that overarching work plan. So I kind of veered off there, but I did want to.
Yeah, so more to come. You know, this is just an example. It's not proposal. We could mock up more examples, but that's probably not as meaningful as actually getting into the work of developing the actual proposals. So once we have approval of the guiding principles, then next steps are, especially with goal strategies and measurable outcomes, to come back to the board with beginnings of recommendations around those.
And I think another thing I would add in terms of expectations is that this table is helpful, has been helpful to date for the conversation with the board and stakeholders around what needs to be in the plan and how do those pieces all relate to each other. But very quickly, we're going to get to a point where we can't present this in a table format. You know, the columns would take over multiple pages. So we're going to probably move to maybe a different format, but the point being all those pieces would be in the conversation and in the documentation. All right.
Okay. So then moving on, I'll direct you now to the staff report itself. Starting on page 3 of the staff report is the beginning of our discussion around the impact analysis framework. So again, this has not changed. This section of the staff report looks exactly the same as it did in the April staff report to the board, including the two tables. So we were building off of basically the framework that was developed by the independent science panel that put together during the AFNP process, the independent science review of the stakeholder proposals. And so they developed this framework and this symbology. And so we're taking that forward in how we would do our own sort of impacts analysis with this. So table two, then on page four, provides two examples of how this could play out. So the left-hand three columns are kind of what you just saw in that example for the key planning terms. And then what we're comparing is the current plan to a proposed alternative, which is something very generic there for the proposed alternative, just to highlight not a specific change, but the intention of the change would be before in the first example, economic outcomes, and then the second, environmental outcomes. And then really what we're looking at are what are the predicted impacts in the context of greatest permanent value, so economic, environmental, and social values and benefits. So in the first one, we're talking about economic outcomes, so economic, in terms of the economic outputs, the impact would be a positive increase. The environmental, you know, might be something mixed. Social, no changes, again, just an example. And then the second one, you see kind of the opposite effect. We're going to talk about environmental outcomes, so there'd be a detrimental decrease to environment or economic outcomes, beneficial increase to environmental outcomes, and maybe it's a wash on the social. So this is just intended to be a framework that we can use as we move forward in developing what are actually our proposals. There might be different types of analysis that we use to actually get at what the impacts are for each of the strategies that we're putting forward, but we can summarize then what the impacts are in this framework to use this as a tool to demonstrate where the trade-offs exist in our changes.
Questions? Comments? Anything else, Justin? No, that's it. Yeah. We're at the HCP update. Real briefly, our project manager, Cindy Polonik, couldn't be here today. She's internationally competing in dragon boat racing in the country.
Dragon boat?
Yes. So,
really?
Yeah. We have a world-class athlete in our ranks. So she couldn't be here today. So
she's excused.
Hungry?
Yeah.
Hungry.
Yeah. Hungry.
Right.
Wow.
And, you know, if we can get a picture if she could share a picture with us, we'd sure appreciate it.
They're really impressive. I don't know if you've seen them in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have, yeah. Well, I've seen pictures of dragon boats.
Yeah.
Not in Portland.
So,
she's really cool. Follow her, good luck.
I will. She's working right up to the last minute on some HCP business. So I started with that.
I thought you were going to say on strengthening her arms.
She's working very hard on that for a long time. So I'm a sort of a poor substitute for an update, but I think I'll hit the high points for you all. We had, when we met last, but this was already the case, but we hired a couple consultants to work on business case for us, and that's Echo Northwest, and they're teaming up with ICF. I have dyslexia on that one.
Same letters.
Exactly. It's a pretty powerful team. Echo Northwest is the lead on the business case work. They've done this type of work before. And so what they're looking, what they'll be able to present to the board, and I think we're on time for a November presentation, is sort of the what we think could come from an HCP in terms of a range of benefits. So it's not just about financial analysis, but that's part of it. It's also about what the potential benefits are from a biological and conservation perspective. They are will be utilizing existing HCPs in neighboring states with similar types of challenges. They can use some of the work that we had done to date around an HCP. And I think really what we're going to be able to demonstrate to the board is a range we're not going to have specific numbers just by the nature of the fact that we don't have specific strategies for an HCP. So we'll be able to demonstrate, we think we're kind of in this range in terms of outcomes financially and from a conservation perspective, and they are going to incorporate the sensitivity analysis that helps us kind of be able to frame up, you know, where that sort of level of uncertainty is, and if you change this dial, you know, we're going to get a different response on another factor. So that's what that business case analysis is shaping up to look like.
I'm very interested in getting the results of the business case analysis, and maybe you can show that, bring it to us so that we can take a look at it.
Absolutely. And
I'm really concerned about what the assumptions would be going into that. Because I think you can build assumptions that would build a strong case for an HCP, and assumptions that may not be in our best interest.
Okay. Well, so as a standard practice, we'll be bringing that, presenting that to FHLAC ahead of the board meeting. If you want something ahead of that, then I can work together and figure out how that would work.
Well, I mean, as the chair, I mean, as soon as you get something, if you could call me or send me an email and then follow up with a phone call so
sure.
I get thoroughly briefed. So that
yeah.
I'm on top of this before we get to the meeting.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
And then of course, anything, Kathleen, ask to be addressed before you speak, please. Would you like to say something?
Chair Jody, may I speak?
Yes.
Listen, I would like to be included in any information on that also, please.
Of course.
And so, you interrupted me when I was speaking, and that's exactly what I was going to say. Anything that comes to me needs to go to the other members of the trust counties.
Okay, okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
The other pieces of this, I'd say that the, one of them is going to be a really important part of our process, and I'm glad that we have some additional resources to bring to the table, is we're hiring a facility. We've already hired Oregon Consensus, which is a group out of the Yes, thank you. They're out of PSU. And so we're already working with them, and we're hiring a facilitator that's going to work with our steering committee, our scoping team, and our public and stakeholder engagement. And so the facilitator is going to work with our stakeholders to understand what kind of process would stakeholders like us to have to engage stakeholders, get feedback. And then once this facilitator understands that, the facilitator will develop that process and we'll begin implementing it. So those are the really highlights of where we are with the HCP at this point.
Questions?
Can you give a timeline for the HCP?
Oh boy, yeah, it's really along the same time frame as the forest management plan, so they're parallel processes, so roughly about 2.5 years. If the board, there's two major check-ins with the board. The first one is in November. Do you want us to keep working on the forest management plan? I'm sorry, the HCP. If the answer is yes, then we move into a strategy development phase. We would come back to the board during that phase and say, okay, we think these are the strategies that are lining up, and here's how we think they'll play out in terms of benefits to the state and Oregonians and counties. And then ask the board, do you still want us to work on this? And if they say yes again, then we enter the NEPA process, which is a process with the federal agencies, and they have their own public process that they use as well to move the HCP to a point of assigned agreement and services.
Thank you.
That's the HCP. We have a couple other agenda items here. I put the Tillamook Forest Heritage Trust and the Stanberry Trail update on the agenda because there's going to be presentations on those two pieces at the board meeting. I will briefly touch on those. It would be nice to have our executive director here, Ross Holloway, because he's really he's a critical part of the, both the trust and the Salmonberry, but Justin and I are going to tag team. So for the intention of the Tillamook Forest Heritage Trust portion of Ross's presentation is really to educate the board members that aren't familiar with the trust on when the trust was formed, what their strategies or strategic plan is about, and how they serve as the nonprofit arm for the State Forest Division and related to, for the agency as a whole. And so for those of you that may not know, the trust was formed in conjunction with the Tillamook Forest Center, so a nonprofit organization to help us pursue grants and funding to ultimately build the Forest Center and build sort of a coalition around that to get that work done and bring the skill set together to help make that happen. Tim was obviously a big part of that in the beginning.
I got railroaded into part of the State Forest
Center. So
we went all over the state.
Yeah.
Raised money.
Yeah.
I spent days and days on the road.
So that's the trust. They're still in place. They've taken some time to step back and think about what are their sort of strategic initiatives for the year, and they're going to be going over that with the board. And they basically fall into the same categories that we have for greatest common value, in essence, and picking up that social benefit in particular. So recreation, they're helping us think about and actually already implementing mechanisms to do some fundraising for our recreation program. They're obviously still squarely focused on education interpretation at the Tillamook Forest Center and helping to raise funds to support that and some education programs there and seasonal positions for us last year when we were short in money. And then they've extended their mission to also support the development of the Salmonberry Trail. I look, I'm missing a piece for them, but I think that's it. Oh, communications.
They see the Salmonberry Trail, which, if developed, a section of it runs through the state forest. And so they see that very much tied to the recreation, education, interpretation mission, and it's a huge project. And so part of their strategic plan also has some really serious thought about them as an organization. Right now they have almost just a part-time executive director that's funded by us, and so the goal there is to become a fully fledged 501c with a full-time executive director, full-time development director, and some additional staff capacity. And so that's part of their strategic plan, is not only the focus on their direct work for state forests, but also for the work on where is the trust going and how are they going there. And they are looking for board endorsement of their strategic plan.
It really is full-time work. So having that executive director as just a half-time funding is going to become limiting, especially if the Salmonberry really takes off.
What about FTLAC?
Sure.
Is that something you'd like?
Great.
I will bring that up with the executive director and the chair of the Tillamook Forest Heritage Trust. Yeah, it's
Yes. I didn't understand if the increase to full-time executive director, does that mean that's going to be needing additional funds for the Tillamook Center? Is that what the crux of this conversation is?
It's the Salmonberry, so they've also become, there's a group, interagency group, the Salmonberry Trail Interagency group, and they are the kind of lead on developing the Salmonberry Trail as a rails, true trail, and in some portions of rails with trails, as the final decision has not been made. And they have the Tillamook Forest Heritage Trust has become the fiscal agent for STIA and is supporting that work. And so given the size of that project, it would be scaling up to be able to really raise funds as the first step would be for sort of a catalyst project. And I think they're thinking in the Banks, Vernonia area, kind of extending west from the Banks Vernonia Trail. And so part of that is if they are going to become a large fundraiser, and they, that is still connected to their primary function of supporting state forests, recreation, education, and interpretation, they do need to have a full-time executive director and a full-time development class.
So, I mentioned this so much before, Senator, and it's fabulous. With the foundation, that's a separate revenue source from timber money, or how does that work?
Yeah, it is separate. It's a nonprofit organization that's primarily supported through fundraising and grants. And then they have.
And I know that Travel Oregon is also interested in the Salmon Berry Trail.
That's correct.
And it goes near the Allen River, that is also up for possible scenic destination.
Right. Travel Oregon, I think, is on. Are they on Stia? No.
No.
Okay. But Travel Oregon has been very active. That's correct. Washington County Visitors Association is on CF. So, Kathleen, I would say that the crux of this conversation here with the board isn't so much around we're going to need a full-time director. It's really more around, hey, there's this nonprofit arm that helps support the mission of the division and the agency. Here's the full suite of strategic initiatives that they're addressing, how they support the division, and then dovetailing that into an update on the Santa Berry.
Yeah. Okay.
Wouldn't this be the Tillman Forest Heritage Trust and Santa Berry Trail Project? This is all about is if this is such a huge project that if it's going to happen, they're going to have to up their game. And get somebody on full time and become a 501c.
They are a 501c.
Oh, well, you said they weren't.
I said they're going to be a fully
fledged. You know, different funding structure and tools and accountants. And I mean, it does up the game. It is more resources than.
It's more
because, you know, we can't, the current system would just crumble under the weight of a project as big as the Santa Cruz Trail.
Yeah, it's either fish or cut bait right now. From my perspective, this is such a big project that it's not going to happen unless the organization gets more professional.
And they're taking a very thoughtful approach to that whole process of developing and growing an organization yet maintaining their core mission, which I think is very important to them around state forest recreation, education, and interpretation.
Kathleen?
Would they be eligible for funding from the tourism dollars?
I don't see why not, but I'm not a nonprofit expert. Ross Holloway, who's the halftime executive director, he's a retiree from ODF. He's very active in writing grants, so he's looking all over the place for grants. He's very effective at it.
And our previous state forester, Doug Becker, is the part-time development director.
Oh, Doug's involved in this.
So, Justin, do you want to hit on some of the high points around the Salmon Berry itself?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Peter mentioned there's a catalyst project kind of starting on the Banks area. There's also another project that's happening in the city of Tillamook. So there is some work going on out there to help develop this. Kathleen had asked about Travel Oregon. They are involved, and they helped develop the strategic marketing plan for the Santa Berry Trail. I think they provided funding and expertise with that, or maybe it was just funding. But at any rate, they are a principal there. There's also a benefits study that was done by the Rails to Trails Conservancy. Well, it was done by PSU, Rails Trails Conservancy was a partner in that and providing some funding, and they found some good stuff with that. So the benefits study looking at somewhere on the magnitude of $20 million in annual economic benefits from having a trail, estimating somewhere in the neighborhood of 266,000 users a year, which would result in about $4 to $5 million in direct spending in the communities there at the trail. So that's that study happened. There's planning going on really on the valley side and the coastal side, and getting into the project implementation for sure, like I mentioned. So near Manning, the Manning Trailhead, is where Washington County Visitors Association and Travel Oregon, again, in partnership with state parks, they're looking at building a new trailhead there, which would, in that area, the Banks Vernonia Trail runs right alongside and not very far from where the future trail will be located, so where the existing railway is. So looking at building a new trailhead there and kind of bringing together those trailheads for the two different trails. And along with that, then building the first of the catalyst projects, as they're coined. So these are the projects that really kind of get everything kickstarted in a catalytic way. So creating a loop that would it adds several miles. Pull this up a little closer so I can see. So it would extend. Let's see. Six to about 10 miles of trail, and create a loop with the existing about 25 miles of trail from the Banks Vernonia trail there at the Banks Vernonia or LL Stewart, the Sub Stewart State Park rather. So it'll create this sort of parallel pathway that diverges and then ends up creating a loop inside the park. So people can start actually riding on that part of the Sandberg Trail and then connect up onto the Banks Vernonia and either continue on the Banks Vernonia or come back to the trailhead. It's, there's an existing trailhead and they're building that new one, so that'll all be part of the that catalyst project, that loop. So that is kind of what's going on with that, and Ross will get into a lot more detail for the forestry, I'm sure, being as he's the expert, but it's a kind of high level where the project is. So they're fundraising and looking to get that project going in a bigger way, you know, really starting now.
Questions? Yes.
Go ahead.
Are horseback riders able to access the trails also?
Yes. I think so I don't have the planning document in front of me, so I can't speak to the specifics of what all of this looks like in that area. Unfortunately, I can follow up with you for sure in some more specifics offline. But generally speaking, the parts of the trail will have they'll be very wide, and they'll accommodate horseback riding, walking, running, mountain biking, that sort of thing. Other portions of the trail might be very narrow, and they can still accommodate some of those uses, but maybe not side-by-side with high density. So, but I believe in this area, there's a lot of existing horseback riding and mountain biking in the region, and that's going to continue to be accommodated.
Yeah, I have the main point I'd maybe add to that is that it's all non-motorized. Good. Yeah. I'm okay with that. Anything else? No. All right. So we're up to field updates. We've got a few field folks in the audience. Anybody want to give an update? Kate, are you prepared to say something?
I can always say something.
Can I sit up here?
Yeah.
guess the one update I'd offer up on Tillamook District, well, first off is I wanted to thank Commissioner Yamamoto and Josie. We just finished our land exchange with Tillamook County between ODF. And so Tillamook County is now officially owning and managing the Tillamook County, or Trask County Park. And ODF has now received a spread wayside lands and lands surrounding it through this exchange. So this has been about 2.5 years or longer. And I think Liz just signed the documents and it got reported this week. So thank you to both of you on that effort. It's been a great partnership with County Parks and has actually built some more opportunity with County Parks to kind of align where our lands are adjacent on some of our management and expectations.
So I think we need to thank you, Kate.
Yeah.
Because this is really something that benefited us greatly, and so your efforts were wonderful and we appreciate it.
Thank you. I'll pass it on to staff. So, I think the second part, if I can tee off of what State Forest Regarder said, is around the workforce futuring piece. And so I was involved with that with Andy and others. And we have one of the biggest staffs for State Forest in Tillamook. And so I kind of wanted to really be involved with that. And one of the big decisions, which if you read the document seems like a minor decision, but was really big, was our commitment to keeping offices in our different counties and our different current locations right now. Because of the partnership we have with the counties and the community and user groups and those kind of things. And so, as I said, if you read through the documents, it seems minor, but it's a pretty big decision for us going through that process. And we've got, as Peter said, we've got several of our current employees. We shifted out of our role, but our current employees that are driving that process and helping populate what does that transition plan look like to the new system and organization, and also working through, I would say, almost a cultural change of we're moving from district goals to division goals and kind of changing what our work locations might be. I'll probably have people sitting in my office that no longer report to me, and so that's a cultural change that we're all going to have to get used to, but I think it's going to really keep the field and staff really tied together to move forward. Any questions for me? All right, thank you.
I have a question.
Go
yes.
ahead.
And I guess I should have asked about Peter Doherty this too, but with this reorganization, are there going to be just jobs that are lost?
No, I think actually,
or just reassigned?
Most of them will be reassigned, reclassifications. I think in the new, we've been holding a lot of vacancies to get through and to have some money savings, but to give us some space to make decisions. And so through this new organization, I think we actually have 3 or 4 more positions than we do today. But there'll be duties will be different, and classifications might be a little bit different as well.
I would just add, though, that it's still a very low level of staffing from sort of a heyday of 277 FTE to what's going to be, I think, 193.30 something. So still, I'd say a very lean organization, and a big part of the work that is still remains is that in order to continue operating with this type of staffing level, we realized through the efforts that Kate and Andy led up that there was nothing we can kind of take off the plate, like, oh, we're just going to stop doing this, and that means we need fewer employees. There's really nothing like that. And so that's the heavy lift was, how do we do business differently so we can still achieve those goals with a smaller workforce? So that's an important part, Kathleen. And with that said, nearly everyone's job changes in some way. So the employees are going through that, and that can be very difficult. And there are people whose positions are no longer there. Like that those actual positions are not there. So there are a handful of employees who will, you know, while that is the case, there are new positions that have been created, but they in essence will be sort of applying, if you will, for those jobs. So it's not without impact to our employees.
Oh, well, thank you for explaining that. And Kate, congratulations on and Joe, Chair Josie and the Tillamook team on that land exchange going through the collaborative work.
Thank you.
Mike?
Do you have anything you want to ask, Cody?
Just real briefly, I guess, I would read Mike Cody from the West Oregon District Forester. So it's July, so July means a bunch of things for us. We've started a new fiscal year, so our new annual operation plans are all signed off, and we're implementing those, and that's moving along. July also means that we're at kind of the heart of our Northern Spotted Owl and Marbled Murrelet survey season, which is for my district in particular, a big lift and a big workload that goes on. It also means there's this little thing called fire season that we're in the midst of, and we've already had two team deployments. And
that's how work is flow.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you just kind of move around where it'll work. It's job security became more of a thing. So, but we've had a number of our state forest staff already diverted off their normal day-to-day workloads of doing state forest work and fighting fire. And it looks like that opportunity is going to continue for several months here, or at least a couple of months. So. I think the big thing, I don't know if we talked about too much, but right here at the beginning of July was the implementation of our new, basically, one of our business improvement systems. All of our systems have all been converted and moved to what we call WALT, which is that's tracking all of our timber sale work, all of our forest product permit work, all of our reforestation work, all of our contracts are all going through the system. So there's been, in amongst sending folks to fires and chasing things around, there's all that training and implementation is going on. So it's, and it's been working well, and so we're encouraged with that. So that's kind of the, I think, in terms of the field operations, the implementation of WALT has been a big thing for us.
Do you have
questions?
Mike?
Yeah,
I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
WALT is, that's not a program that I can get my hands around.
I can barely get my hands around it. Yeah. So, I mean, everything from every single load ticket of load logs goes through that system. Everything, as we write a timber sale contract, it goes through that system. As we develop an annual operation plan, it goes through that system. It is really, I mean, from the very beginning of the system all the way through it. So if the computers go down, we're in big trouble. But,
invoicing, revenue distribution.
Maybe we
if you want to buy a wood cutting permit, it goes through that system.
Future meeting, maybe we'll get a free overview of what WALT is.
Yeah, it's a pretty powerful tool, and it takes some stuff that's been in place for decades and decades and decades that's been on life support and diverse tools.
Yeah, it's a big project for sure. It will definitely increase efficiencies for us.
That's the part I'm interested in.
Okay.
Else. Andy, I know you want to speak to us.
White for the record.
So, for the record, Andy White, Northwest Oregon Area Director. I missed the opening comments, but as I came into the room, Peter was talking about workforce featuring. We also had Kate reference that as well. And if this has already been said, then just shut me down and I'll go sit back in my seat there. But I think one of the important things to keep in mind as we do this is we're not just flipping the switch on this and we transition overnight. You know, Mike just referenced WALT, you know, a new system. And so this is something that's going to, we're going to transition to over a couple of years. Kate referenced the vacancies. We're going to use that as a way to mitigate impacts to employees. But to back up a little further, one of the important concepts in this is we're not just organizing differently for the sake of organizing. It's really workflow, business processes that are changing, and the organizational changes are an outcome of that. So it's not the organizational chart that drives a different way of doing business. It's a different way of doing business that requires us to be organized differently. And we're going to do that in a way over time to utilize vacancies that takes advantage of the new technologies and these new business systems that are coming online and actually incorporated as a part of this process as opposed to this happening in silos. So that's the only thing I was going to add had that not been mentioned already.
What kind of pushback are you getting? I mean, are you not, that's not the right question.
are you getting a lot of or sufficient amount of pushback? Not this. Are you getting pushback?
No, I'd say we're getting anxiety, right? I mean, you tell somebody that we're going to change the way we're going to do business, and as an organization, as a state forest, the vision, the reality that that's probably going to change everybody's job to some degree. And for a big chunk of people, it will change their job to some degree, but probably not enough to make any difference. For others, as Liz mentioned, there's a handful of positions that blink out because we need something different in the future. And there's been full disclosure, transparency with those folks who are in those positions and how the timeline of the process is being designed to minimize impacts to employees. And so I'd say, I wouldn't characterize it as pushback. I would characterize it as folks just being concerned and having anxiety around change, and especially change as significant as what we're talking about here. And part of the reason I say we're not getting a lot of pushback is, and Peter was talking about it when I came through the door, is this has been a process that we've been involved in for over a year, where we've had multiple meetings with all offices throughout the process, and a lot of the ideas that we're going to incorporate came from those folks. So it's been kind of a grassroots effort where we pulled this information together to try and build, you know, the most efficient ways we can as a state agency to do business going forward. And now we're basically saying, with those new business processes, when we put those in place, we're organized like this, and now we've got to transition to something different. And how do we develop a transition plan that connects those dots with the new workflows in place at the right time, and then the new organizational structure to support that? And there's no easy way to do that. It's going to be a little messy, and folks are just going to have to trust in the process and know that we're going to be telling them all along the way the realities of where we're at in that process.
So it's important to me that, and I'm sure you're, see, I've been through this before with the department, not to this degree, but as you know, there's been consolidation efficiency efforts that passed with Tolman and Boyd's goal. And some of that was good, and some of it had to be revised. And so I assume that there are enough people on the team that remember past efforts that can give valuable input.
Yeah. I went through that.
I was looking right at
you. I was in ground zero in that, if you remember.
I do remember.
Yeah, so trying to take what we know from what worked well and didn't work well in the past, and also trying to incorporate some new thinking in how we do business differently. Our business model is what it is. And how do you find efficiencies and more efficient ways of doing business with your existing revenue streams?
It's necessary. You know, there's lots of opportunity for error, and you're going to make mistakes. We know that.
Yep.
Well, it's a different, you know, we've been, how long have we been not, have, how long have we been organized and operating in this way? Well, decades upon decades upon, and the world has changed. You know, it's time to step back and think about how do we manage public lands, serve Oregonians, meet our obligations, present revenue to the counties, under the current demands and constraints that we live in. You know, ESA, Clean Water Act, timber markets, all those things, it's a different world. And we were organized, you know, it was time for the organizational structure and business practices to catch up.
What kind of, I'm sure you said this, but I just don't remember, what time did you have consultants working with you on this?
Yeah.
We had David New, who's a consultant who this is what his business does, is help folks with business modeling and organizational change.
And I think that's the key thing that Andy mentioned, was that we looked at business processes and workflows, and how do we do our work better? We didn't go at this as how do we change our organization to do our work better. It was really focused on the workflows and what's a more efficient workflow process. that then drove the organizational change. I think that, if you characterize what was different between the combining, that's probably the most fundamental difference between the previous approach and the approach you guys took.
And one of the things that I've heard over the years is that from the private sector within the same industry, that lots of inefficiencies with the way the department manages the program. I know it was really comparing apples to oranges, but there are some, I think, valuable insights that the private sector can give me on this. Were they involved?
Well,
yeah, so part of the effort was visiting other entities, whether it was other organizations, nonprofits, private entities, to look at how they're organized and how they do work. And, you know, you still run into that apples and oranges because nobody has a mandate the same as ours. Some of the other state agencies had similar, but they had different mandates, they're operating in different climates with different constraints. But there's still lessons learned as you look at how what has or has not worked for other state agencies, other nonprofits. Kate and Brian spent time traveling around visiting with other entities to glean what we could from either some of their history and what has worked for them or what they're currently doing now and what has worked for them.
And
so we're doing this in a vacuum.
And a consultant works with private industry,
right.
Has worked with private industrial companies. Brian
Hugh,
the deputy commission chief, came from the private industry, so his firsthand experience.
Never seen Brian here anymore.
Well, he's the dedicated workforce speaker, but that's going to change. it is a big change, and the fact that we are not private industry, we're managing public land. Is key to some of the reasons that we have to do this differently. The big one being public process and public planning, and you know, it's a pretty different set of expectations. Types of surveys we do for T&E, working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, in a way that meets public expectations. There's just a lot of things that you're exactly right to make it apples to airplanes.
Apples to airplanes.
Justin,
that wasn't very good.
Okay.
You know me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Nope.
Could I comment? I really appreciate what you've done in becoming more efficient. And, but I also want to add some perspective to what it's like at the counties. We did the same thing 8 years ago. And we didn't reduce our workforce by 35%. We reduced it by 45%. And we didn't have the budget to have the benefit of anyone helping. We just had to do it. And it was tough, but it was done. And we shed over 250 jobs out of 500. Now, what the hell there were 550 people? I have no idea. But nonetheless, the counties, you see us begging for revenues and how important our county forest trust lands are to our local governments and to our counties. I just wanted you to have that perspective to help you understand where we've been and where we still are, because we're reducing with working with not enough people to keep our jails open, to take care of the people who are now unemployed and have turned to drugs and other things that get them in trouble. So I just throw that out. But it's not, I'm not trying to diminish what you're doing, because it's really important, but I just add this for some perspective.
It doesn't diminish what they're doing and adds to what they're doing, but it also puts an exclamation point on why we're here as a county commission. Because it's so, what you do is so important for our economic viability.
Yeah, well,
so Peter and Liz, I want to make sure you know that Shannon at 10 a.m. just hosted a day where a large group of people came out and started off a safety briefing, went out to look at an actual logging operation, the equipment on the ground, the 40 units, look at the safety, look at the before and after some thinning operations, went and saw a future sale site, went to our San Diego horse camp,
And I appreciate greatly the fact that B11 Forest Service really take me out and I bring my own bag lunch, and I had my peanut butter and jelly sandwich and my collection of Doritos, and you guys delivered a catered lunch up at the horse camp. But it closed our day, and we went by other notable spots and stops. We closed our day at the office at a bid opening, and it was so neat to be there. And it's pretty dry, I mean, it's not an auction, but it was neat to see a variety of timber companies there and bidding, and to see the results of what will potentially be for me another check in the mail someplace down the road. But I greatly appreciate being able to go out and with your teams and actually get on the ground with them and visit a variety of things from culvert replacements all the way through to the sale of the timber, and to see it all in one day. And thank you.
Well, thank you for coming, because I do think that, I mean, when you see it on the ground, it brings a perspective that you cannot get otherwise. So appreciate your willingness to see what we do actually on the ground. I think it's really important.
And I would open again the conversation we need to have around your recreation facility, because the day we were there, no one was camping. And it is just absolutely beautiful.
It's a great spot.
It's a great spot. And it has camping sites for non-horses. It had a trail that horses, bicycles, and walkers could all and all accelerate and beyond. So,
yeah.
Anyways, thank you for the tour.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's go to the next agenda item. We're right on time. And this is discussion and adjournment. So, of course, the discussion is the Board of Forestry meeting, which is going to be on the 24th. Is there anything that you want John or I to say to the Board of Forestry meeting?
I have a sit down that I want to talk about. Go ahead, so just give me some time.
All right. Remind you. Anything you want us to say? If not, there's a very likelihood that I will be there. If I do decide to testify, it will not be during the FTLAC testimony period because I won't be representing FTLAC. It would be during the public comment period representing myself and or Tilden County.
So just if in the past, if a member of the FTLAC wants to give testimony, you know, the personal testimony we have, use that slot if there is no formal FTLAC testimony. We just request that you make that clarifying statement.
That works. Thank you.
And I appreciate that, because I have the recognition of the special relationship to the counties, and actually having a separate space for that, I think, is great. So
it's always there. It's always there.
A spot for that. And
that's why I want to recognize it and have you actually take that opportunity. Clarify, you're not speaking for the body, but you are speaking on behalf of, and that's a great place for you to have it.
Okay.
I think that's very important, yes, and I think that myself.
Okay. Any other business? Not any other business. Is there, again, anything that the FTLAC members want me to say on behalf of the Trust Counties? If not,
I can make a clarification, what is the FBI able to say if the majority is not comment, what would the comment be?
Well, I think that's precisely the question. And that's the reason why, and the question, and the answer is that there will be no testimony, because we've been advised to not speak on behalf of the implementation of the new forest management. And so anything that we speak to cannot go in that realm. And so we won't. Kathleen, if you wish to speak, you don't have, Clatsop County doesn't have the same constraint.
Right, just what Peter Doherty said. So if you're speaking for your county, Are we going to be speaking under the FDIC spot or under public comment?
Under the FDIC spot. That was...
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So long as there is the statement at the very beginning, if I'm going to be testifying, not on behalf of the FDIC, I need to say, I'm Jim Josie, Tillamook County Commissioner, speaking on behalf of the Tillamook County Commission or just myself personally.
And we can help clarify that as well. We can say that we understand that there is no formal comment from the FDLAC, but several individual commissioners from the FDLAC have chosen to provide testimony and kind of help bring that clarity to the record.
But you would be speaking as a Tillamook County Commissioner.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. That's very helpful. Thank you.
So,
thank you. Some time ago, the department provided all the members of the FTLAC a form for feedback on how they were doing, and we're looking for just comments. And one of the things that was sent back to the department was that it would probably enhance the experience of the dialogue in these meetings if reading materials went out to the members of the FTLAC before the meeting actually started. And I just want to thank Liz for taking that on and making that happen. And I do think that it has helped with people coming into these meetings prepared to discuss the substance.
Thank you.
I agree.
Much
appreciated.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
Any further business before us?
Say one thing to both Kathleen and Tim on the phone. I just want to acknowledge it is very challenging, I'm sure, for you all to figure out how to and to find a way just mechanically to be able to engage in the conversations that are happening here in the room. So I apologize if there are challenges with it. We have speakers at our tables here, but probably not enough. So we'll continue trying to find a way to make that run a little bit more smoothly, but really appreciate you both being on the phone.
Yeah, and then Tim Freeman, when he spoke, he says, you have time for me, Mr. Chair, and then I fit him in. So I think we got to the point where it worked. If somebody on the phone wants to speak, pipe up and say, I want to be put in the queue, and then I'll recognize them. And what I try to do, and it's not necessarily the group this small, you know, we have a bigger group and a bunch of people want to talk. Even one this small, I mean, there are a bunch of people who want to talk. They raise their hand or put their tent up, and then I write it down, and then I just work down the list. We haven't had to do that today. But I want to be fair to everybody. Nothing bothers me more than if I want to say something, get I have the chair, and then the chair promptly forgets that I said anything. And then pretty soon, I'm ticked off, and they move on. And so I don't want to do that. All right, any further business before us?
If not, yeah, I'd kind of like to make a comment also.
Go ahead.
So I thank you, Liz, for your comment. It is difficult on the phone, and I am stressed that I was unable to attend the meeting today. I just was at work way too late last night to drive down to Salem. But I apologize for any awkwardness or rudeness that may have been on my part. I feel passionate about these items, and so I will endeavor to try to do better at the next meeting. And I apologize, if I spoke over your work.
So thank you, Kevin. It's okay. We ironed it out. Okay, so with that, we're adjourned.
That's sincere. What a great vehicle. Variety of people looking on.